Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. Got a midget and a Jew, so why don't you sit down and listen to our dope podcast during lunch, dinner, or breakfast. Brad Williams and Adam Ray are here for you any time of the day. So come on and treat yourself right. It's about last night.
Hello, hello, hello.
Yeah, good.
How's that, good?
Yeah, it's good.
It's very refreshing having you on the podcast because there are many people, I will not name names, but they're comics, but they sit back and they just kind of do the thing where they're like, yeah, but they're not talking loudly, but you're a radio guy.
They don't have that mic technique that the pros have.
Did you ever take a class, or did you just come out of the womb being like, these are the jokes, folks. This is the placenta.
Yeah, I started when I was 17. I got a radio gig. I was going to college.
That's young, I feel like, to be a part of the radio world, right?
Yeah, it is. I had just started at Western Michigan University, and I got a job on their radio station there. And then I saw that there was an opening in town, so I went and got a job at a little AM station called WYYY, which is what they were asking after they hired me.
That's how we start, folks.
I mean, if you don't know Frasier's comedy, and it's hard pressed to find somebody
bad
who
for you.
I feel bad
you
for you.
I know I don't.
But I mean, there's only one. How good does it feel to know that there is only one Frasier Smith?
Well, that's both good and bad. That could be good and bad. But you know what? It's funny. I am lucky to have a style that not many have.
Yeah.
You know?
Did you have this on the air when you? Okay, so you get that job at 17, and what are you doing for them?
Well, the good thing about that was that you have to do everything.
Yeah.
You know, at a little station like that, and I always tell people when they ask me, well, they don't ask so much anymore because radio's kind of, but they
it's all about podcasting now. Podcasting is the future. This medium that you're listening to.
You guys have pushed us off the air.
Yeah.
But, you know.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot, guys. But, I when I got the gig, I had to learn everything. And I always tell people that wanted to go into radio, take a job at a small station because when I first started, I couldn't believe it. They go, okay, you're going to be here for 5 hours, and there was no one else there.
Yeah.
And I had never, they showed me real quickly how to run everything. I didn't know how to run anything. And you have to do everything. You have to sweep up afterwards. You have to do news, sports.
Wow.
Weather, check the wire, because back then you had a news wire.
Yeah.
You had to pull all the news off of that, write your news report while you're playing records. And then
Jesus.
When there's a break, you come in and do the news, and then you come in.
I mean, it's part of the, I guess, the job when you first get to the station to be able to possess all those skill sets. But no one's ever going to be doing all that at the same time, right?
No, but I think the thing is you learn the fundamentals.
Gotcha.
It's kind of like sports. If you're not going to play every position, but
right.
If you know every position, it helps.
Gotcha.
And
yeah. Did you insert comedy into all these different roles?
I had no choice.
Yeah.
I was like the record I was ending and I didn't have the other one, so I'd have to make some jokes and then cue up the record.
Wow.
It was back in the turntable days.
Well,
I was scratching before there was scratching.
And that was on accident.
Yeah, it was totally an accident.
Now, in for my brief time in radio, we would have a technician there where if something broke or something didn't work, we could call them. Did you even have that, or was it just
I did
like,
have that.
Okay, so but, if the lights all went down, you could call someone
I
in
could
there.
Call this guy, but, he was usually drunk. no, but, you could. I had a guy I could call.
Okay.
They always seemed bothered by anything. It's like, what, man?
Yeah.
I
have to actually do my job.
Yeah. But it was good training. I learned how to do all that stuff.
That's just ridiculous. And I've heard so many radio stories about this where there's not, like you say, there's a brief, just like, hey, hit this button, figure it out.
Well, yeah, they kind of let you fly by the seat of your pants.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's good, sometimes not. But I think it teaches you quickly to get it together.
Well, and then when you know all those skills, like you say, like you sort of taught yourself how to do everything, that means you're available for everything. So if
True.
On a big show, they lose a board tech or a board op or a sports guy or a news guy or anything like that, you have the opportunity to fill those shoes.
Well, yeah, you know, but you know, I remember the first time I did sports on the air. I was reading the sports, and I get this call from my program director. He goes, "What the hell are you doing?" I go, "Well, I'm reading the sports." He goes, "That's yesterday's scores."
Like, it doesn't mean they're not important.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Maybe still right. Effects today.
Still happened.
How would you do the news? Do you remember?
Well, you figure the stories that you feel would probably be, you know, most important, and you usually start with the top story, and then you end with it. It's just like in stand-up where you have your best joke at the beginning and at the end. You know, you try to...
What was considered a top story for radio news? Always tragedy, yeah?
Well, yeah, pretty much. Well, it was back in the... how old I am, it was back in the Vietnam era. So it was usually something about Vietnam.
So you're talking about last choppers out of Da Nang.
Kind
of,
yeah. Yeah.
And so isn't it crazy to see how far we've come? Because now it's like, all right, this Kardashian is going through this divorce. You're like, I guess that's our modern-day Vietnam.
Well, to me, that's actually probably worse than Vietnam. Could be in a lot of ways.
You know what? There's maybe my favorite movie of all time is Goodfellas, and there's a line in there where they're going to see a stand-up comic, and they say, "Oh, you're gonna love this guy. He's the king of the one-liners."
King
of the one-liners.
Yeah.
And I'm going, well, that's now it's a false story because it's not Frazier Smith.
Well, you know what, guys? Thank you.
King of the one-liners.
I don't know if I'm the king, but I do know that when you compare yourself to a real, like, I got to work with Rodney Dangerfield, who was really the king.
When did you work with Rodney?
Well, he used to come into Laugh Factory down the street here every Friday night for a while, and I was the 8 o'clock show host. Mm-hmm. And Rodney would waddle in, and literally waddle, usually with his fly down and his shirt sticking through it. And then he's stoned to the gills.
Really?
Yeah, and he was with his awesome 35-year-old wife, his beautiful wife, and they'd come in, and he'd walk in, and he could barely get up on stage, and the crowd would give him a standing O, just getting up on stage.
Yeah,
and then...
So he's still, at this point, still just a juggernaut. I mean...
Well, at this point, he's 82.
Okay. But I mean, like, the prestige of him being, the aura of his presence.
The
was
kids
still...
got who he was. The kids knew from the movies, mostly from, you know, Caddyshack and stuff like that. But they knew who he was, and they respected him. And, you know, he would kind of muddle through his set, and he could barely get through the set, the 15-minute set.
Sure.
And then I heard that he was going to do a big show. He had to do a show at a radio convention, and they were paying him $50,000 to do 45 minutes. Mm-hmm. So I thought, oh man, he's not going to be able to get through it. He can hardly get through that 15 minutes, you know. So I happened to be there. Jamie Masada and I were at this thing. Jamie was there with Rodney, and he looked like a whole different human being. He was in the blue suit with the red tie, immaculate. Yeah. He got up there and he just hammered for 45 minutes.
Wow.
Destroyed the place.
That's amazing.
And it just showed me, it taught me, you know, when the money's on the line, the old pro shows up.
You know, you know what's also amazing about that is this either shows that we're either sick people or maybe we have the right idea. But some people I know would hear Rodney Dangerfield going up on stage at 83 years old, the Laugh Factory, doing 15 minutes ago. Oh, how sad. And I hear that and go, how awesome is that?
Yeah, it's pretty
That we awesome. Can still do this job. Like, when they're talking about, like, they're talking about LeBron James, who is an Adonis, who is a physical perfection. He's 34.
Brad, put your pants on.
I mean, hold on. I'm almost finished. And and they're talking about, like, oh, he's 34. He's over the hill. Or it's amazing he's still doing this. We're like, oh, we could be 83 and still doing this job.
It is a sickness. But, you know, somebody told me they had worked with George Burns towards the end there. And he was 100.
Yeah.
And he came off stage and he had this little piece of paper, like we always have the stuff jotted down. He goes, "I was just trying out some new stuff." He's 100 and he's trying out new stuff.
That's getting his new hour together.
Yeah.
Can you even imagine what you're, I mean, and who's, and is there a record of, is that the oldest comedian that, like, I mean, was still performing?
Maybe, it's got to be up probably, there. There's probably some 105-year-old that did open mic night for the very first time who technically has the record.
And you have to.
George Burns, come on, 100 years old.
Yeah. And I guess you have to give it up for, if, like, someone's 105 and they're performing, you got to laugh.
Well, they're still asking you, who books that gig?
Yeah.
know, hey, the old booker died. Yeah. But, you know, with those guys, you know, with Rodney, it's nice of you to say what you said about my one-liners, but
yeah.
I have about a tenth of as many one-liners as a guy like Rodney. I remember that one live album where he does like an hour of one-liners.
Yeah.
He stops halfway through and he goes, I know a lot of fucking jokes. and then he goes on and does another half hour of nonstop jokes. So,
and when you think about that, like a one-liner from Rodney took maybe 10 to 15 seconds. So that's 4 or 5 jokes a minute.
It's a million jokes.
And so to do, so that's 60 times 4. Like that's the number. That's over 120 jokes that you have to remember in an hour.
Yeah.
Was he one of your influences?
Yeah, I love Rodney. Yeah. My favorite was Carson.
Yeah. Well, that's another.
I guess for everybody, loved Carson. But
well, and here's something.
He had that style that I just, you know, when I do, a lot of my jokes aren't that good. So what happens is then I just.
Not true.
I make fun of the fact that they don't work. Yeah. And that's what Johnny was best at.
When it was almost more exciting to see Johnny Carson flub a joke because you know that he would get out of it somehow.
Why? And I actually heard that they wrote a bad joke on purpose so he could do a saver.
Really?
Oh, a saver. Yeah.
Wow.
He had his staff write a corny joke that, and then he would have a comeback.
I mean, yeah. And I've seen you do that on the rare occasion when a Fraser Smith joke does not go well. You usually have a good comeback.
I just love Johnny, his whole thing. Like if it wasn't going well, and sometimes, you know, you're doing it every night. And and even though you have, you know, 15 writers, still there's sometimes it is a bad news week.
Right.
And there isn't anything to talk about. So he would have weeks and shows where he wasn't doing that well. And he would just stop and stare at everybody and get a huge laugh. He just stare at Doc and shake his head. And, you know, and the crowd picks up on that timing. He had amazing timing.
Do you have a formula to your writing and your joke style? And two part question for that, because you're also always topical, which is awesome. And when did this style become appealing to you? And like when you first were going on stage, were you a storyteller and it just kind of, you were like, all right, let me cut the fat, and you just kept cutting?
Well, you know what? My radio approach is completely different than my stand-up.
Yeah.
And, you know, in radio, I pretty much tell stories and just, you know, tell little crazy anecdotes of what's been happening during the week or what's happened to me. I don't sit there and tell one-liners on the radio.
Right, yeah.
So I had been on radio for a long time. And so when I went out to first do stand-up, I thought I'd do that same thing and I'd tell some stories and whatever. And that didn't work at all. And so then I thought, well, for me anyway, I mean, it does for a lot of other people. You guys are great at it. I you know, so I thought, well, what else can I do? And then I was a big fan of Carson's and I thought, well, I'm going to try that. I'm going to write jokes.
Yeah.
Because I had to do the news for the radio anyway.
Right.
So I was looking at all the news stories. So I had
access. Them all that day.
Yeah. And then all I try to do really is keep it pretty lean. You know, mm-hmm. keep it as tight as possible.
Yeah.
And get the fat out.
Well, there's that Mark Twain quote where he said, if I had more time, I would have written you a shorter book. And I really like that quote because it just goes like, oh, yeah, I can keep this. I mean, I can keep making this smaller and smaller and smaller. And as a dwarf, I really respect that. Smaller is good.
Yeah.
It really is a challenge whether you're writing one-liners or fuller stories like Brad and I might do, where you still want it to be as tight as possible.
Sure.
So it's challenging on both sides of it as far as...
Because
I think we're always... as comedians on a whole, like looking to just make something as strong from top... Not have anything you're saying be wasted words, but... You know, I struggle with that. I know where I'm like, all right, even though I know this might not be as funny as what's coming after, it's helping to set that up, that next thing, right? So sometimes I might be like, well, just take that out and make it tighter. But then I'm like, yeah, but maybe the punch that it's getting right after is only happening because of what I'm saying.
That's good thinking.
Right?
Yeah, it really is. You're right about that. And sometimes that's why I'll leave a bad joke in. At least that's what I tell myself. Because it sets up the next one. But I think also with that... one thing that's allowed me to, I guess, maintain popularity with the younger audiences as an older comic is that my jokes are short.
Yeah.
So with that shorter attention span that you see today, for a lot of reasons, I'm able to, you know, keep their attention.
Absolutely.
My jokes are short.
And now Rodney's catchphrase obviously was, I get no respect. Does anyone have more sweating-like jokes than you do? I think you're the king of the I'm sweating like insert joke here.
Yeah, I sweat a lot. That's why I was able to come with it. You know, I'm just really using old forms. You know, those are old forms. You know.
Yeah, but nobody.
No one does them,
you know?
Well, that's what I'm lucky with, is since no one is, I can use them all. And yeah. And they are cliched in a way, but they always work because...
Well, you're likable, first of all. Super likable. You know what I'm saying? And that's a piece of the package, don't you agree?
Well, yeah, but don't tell my creditors.
You're so likable that you can follow anything, and you have.
I feel that I can, yeah. Thank you. And
I'm speaking on a whole, like any sort of... situation, but one in particular, which is crazy, but that night at the Laugh Factory when Michael Richards got taped, you are the comic that goes up on after and has to
calm the audience
down? Comment on it even. I mean, that is, I cannot imagine a bigger obstacle for a comedian. There's been times where you follow someone that crushes or bombs that you weren't expecting to, and you're like, wow, there's a different energy in the room, but the energy of N-bomb being screamed to the rooftops, like from a TV star that seems like
he wouldn't do that. Yeah.
I mean, I don't even know. Can you just take us through that night?
Even Roseanne was like, what was he thinking?
Those are the jokes, folks. Yes,
come on, knock it off. Yeah. You could only see me snapping.
Yeah, real quick, wait, before you break down that evening, when did that come in?
Well, it's my version of Snapchat. Snap and then I chat. That's how old school I am.
And for those of you who have never seen Frasier, you usually tell a joke, you tell the one liner, and then right afterward you give a little side snap. Yeah,
that's because I can't afford a drummer.
Yeah, it's a cue.
Yeah,
I mean, so
that was an accident too. Though I was at Brad Garrett's club, in which is a great club, as you know,
in Vegas,
Vegas at the MGM, and. I was walking through the lobby after the show, and everybody was snapping at me with their fingers. And I go, what are you guys doing? And they go, you're that snapping guy. And apparently I was doing it subconsciously and didn't really realize it. So
interesting.
Then I put it into the act.
Wow. I mean, it's just like a tick that you were doing naturally.
Yes, I guess, you know, and with one-liners it works because that was what the drummers used to do back in the day.
Right. That was the rim shot.
In fact, Rodney would go out with a drummer.
Just to do the ba-bum-tsh.
Yeah, ba-bum-tsh.
When you see... comic, like when I first started seeing like guitar comics, and I was like, boy, what a great extra weapon, like to assist the jokes. I mean, that's, you know, to another level, but it is like, and you don't do it every time.
No,
right?
Yeah. No, because you know, you only really need to do it if the joke didn't go over that well, which is a lot, actually.
Well, and
I have carpal tunnel.
and
lost three washes in the last week.
And not to dive too far into the psychology of this, but what you're doing, and you're social cueing the audience.
Well, you
because now they're trained that whenever they see you snap your fingers, a punchline just happened. I should laugh at this.
Well, that's true.
It's subconscious, but it works.
That's true. But the other thing it really does is it kind of spoofs that form of an old school Vegas comic, which is kind of like, hey, you know, keep up with me, man.
Did you see a lot of Vegas comedians when you first started?
Well, yeah, I was always a fan of those guys. I was always a fan of Shecky Green.
Yeah, Shecky Green.
You know, and all those, Bob Hope, I was a big fan.
You saw Bob Hope?
Saw Hope. Met Bob Hope.
Wow. That is one
how old
guy.
Was Shecky. I knew Shecky.
You knew Shecky.
I thought you were saying I met Shaq.
No. I met Shaq too.
Have you?
Yeah.
Oh, geez.
What was a cooler encounter, Shaq
both
or
cool.
Bob Hope?
Both super cool.
Now,
Bob Hope is one of those guys in our business that I would love to. I'm just fascinated by. I think he was just so.
Yeah, kid.
Has there been a movie or documentary on? There probably has, right?
It was called Keep Hope Alive.
Yeah.
Was it really?
No.
Well, look at all those old movies, and he's just amazing. He's amazing.
And how did you meet him?
Yeah.
How did that happen?
Well, he came to Ice House one night and was hanging out there. I got to meet him there, and he came to Laugh Factory one night. I met him there, too.
And that was in his 90s?
Yeah, when he was older.
By the way, we should clarify for the listeners, if you don't know, the Ice House is a comedy club, not a lesbian Eskimo bar.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, both. Actually.
It can be. Yeah. Depends.
On Thursday.
Yeah. One night off. Yeah.
But yeah, back to the thing with Michael Richards.
Sure. So that, can you just take it through that night? I mean, is it a standard night show for you? You're walking in.
Pretty much
in,
a basic night. Basic night.
You're hosting.
And I'm hosting. And I remember the guy. Remember we used to have that big, giant security guy.
Steve.
No, before Steve. Mm-hmm. Brian.
Yes. Oh,
okay. Okay, I remember Brian.
Yeah, yeah, and Brian came up to me and he goes, he was the upstairs bouncer then.
Yeah.
And he goes, Fraser, I'm not feeling well. I have the flu. I'm going home early. I'm leaving before the show. So Steve took off. Brian took off. Yeah. And I didn't even think about it. I thought, oh, okay. So we're doing the show and I brought up Johnny Sanchez first. Mm-hmm. And then I brought
up
Sully McCullough. Both mm-hmm. really good comics.
Great comic.
And then Sully and I are upstairs hanging out in the lounge upstairs and we're kind of half watching the show on the, you know,
TV
like we
screens,
do on the
yeah.
monitor and mm-hmm. talking about other stuff.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden we hear this guy going off because what had happened was they had let a group upstairs at Laugh Factory that were having a birthday party. Mm-hmm. And they were pretty loud.
Got it.
You know, they were loud. And they mm-hmm. weren't really heckling. They were just loud.
Yeah.
And
there's
think,
only as a comic, there's only so long you can ignore that.
You eventually have to say something.
Yes.
Yeah.
But hopefully not.
Hopefully
what
you
he
kill
said.
It with kindness.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, rule of thumb: if you're teaching a comedy course and how to handle noise,
yeah.
Number 1 through 5 on that list should be don't scream the N-word.
Yeah, 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 that would be number one. Well, you know, and really, you I guess what you do is to diffuse that is just yeah, kill him with kindness.
Yeah.
You know, be friendly. And
so you heard the screaming
like
from
and so then
the stage or from the audience?
Well, kind of both.
Okay.
And we look up and he's going off.
You see him just pointing up
and we're
and screaming.
Stunned. It mm-hmm. was like we're stunned.
Because also you haven't seen, look, Michael Richards, I saw him 2 weeks prior at the Belly Room of the Comedy Store, and I'm talking to him, and he's like, hey, yeah. I was like, oh, man. I was like, big fan, man. You going up? He's like, yeah, I don't really have an act, though. I just kind of get up there, and I wing it, and I'm a little nervous. I go, I think you're going to be great. I go, have you just been getting into stand-up? He goes, yeah, well, I was on a show for a while. I go, oh, no shit. What was that? Designing Women? And he kind of laughs, and I go, dude, I know, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And then I go, well, good luck to you up there. I'm sure it'll be great. And he got up there and did a lot of crowd work and whatnot, but there were some girls heckling, and he kind of laid into them, but people were, it was a little malicious, but people were so on board with who he was that it went over great. People loved it.
Yeah.
But I definitely saw a guy who was not comfortable with handling something that was off script.
Well, he was known for kind of snapping.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You know, and he'd done it several times.
Well, okay. I mean, he's the guy, and if you go even deeper into his career, he's the guy where he was doing a live show with Andy Kaufman, and Andy was doing his thing and kind of going off script, where Michael Richards, and this is live on TV, he walks off camera, grabs the cue cards, walks on camera, and slams the cue cards down in front of Andy Kaufman. So he's known to get a little upset.
Well, I think, you know, he was brilliant as Kramer.
Sure.
Let's be honest. He was
unbelievable.
Unbelievable,
yeah.
Right?
Like, I mean, top... I mean, look, all those characters are great, but like what he was doing on that show and Julia Louis-Dreyfus, I mean, they were all freakishly.
They were all great,
but he was
but
like,
he was
that's
unbelievable.
There's never been, the same way there's never been and will be another Fraser Smith, another Kramer, like, show me another TV character that's that believable and grounded, but that big. You know,
he's unbelievably talented at that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, stand-up's a different muscle.
It
and,
is. Absolutely.
And it takes time to, you know, to create a character there. It's a different character than the one you're... It's kind of like with me in the radio.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different character for me than it, you know, in stand-up than it was on the radio, and I had to figure that out.
And you at the lesbian Eskimo bar. Like, you're a different guy there. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah. I am.
You're Pamela.
I am Pamela.
You've got a mullet wig. You've got high jean shorts and cut off at the butt.
And that's a good-looking wig. And, you know, I'm very proud of that.
Yeah.
You know... It just a different muscle. So, you know, he hadn't really developed the stand-up thing yet, I don't
right.
think.
And, so you hear the screaming, and what do you make of it? You're just like, oh, he's got a heckler. Like,
well,
I don't need to get
at
up
first
and
it's
handle
just
this.
Like, whatever, you know. And then it gets really bad.
Mm-hmm.
So we're kind of stunned. And then we go running downstairs. It was like kids on Christmas morning. We go running down those back stairs because we didn't know what was going to happen.
It is kids on Christmas morning because my dad would say the N-word downstairs constantly.
Well, I mean, it was
no, he wouldn't. I want to put that out there.
Yeah.
Hey. No, he wouldn't.
But I mean, we were just like, what's going on? You know, what's it?
What?
And the first person I ran into was Sinbad. And he had just walked in this. He goes,
oh, my Sinbad. God.
Oh, I love him. He goes, Fraze, I haven't been here in 10 years. He goes, is this what goes on in comedy these
days? This is his first time back.
Yeah.
Oh, could you imagine?
I go, I don't know what that was. And,
and
we're all in the back, and somebody goes, you got to go up there. And I'm like, what? And they go, yeah, you're the host. You got to go up there. I'm like, okay, because everybody's filing out.
Yeah.
The guy that he got in the argument with had stood up and said, I want everyone out of this club now. Now, every like he's directing traffic.
The, wow. Wait, the guy he was arguing with.
Yeah.
So not even.
Like, this is from the balcony.
Yeah. He says, not even a manager. Just a guy.
Yeah. Just this guy.
Yeah.
And people are and everyone's grumbling. And I thought for you know chairs were going to start flying. That's what I thought. I thought it's going to get really ugly. So anyway, I'm headed to the stage and I see Jim Gaffigan, and Gaffigan was the next comic on the list.
But so this is after the N-bomb has been exchanged.
Yeah.
What was, first of all, just real quick, when that was said, was there a gasp? Was it a,
yeah, there was a gasp, and everyone was like stunned, and it was like, and so everyone starts filing out.
Yeah.
We want our money back. That was the worst part for Jamie. Everyone wanted their money back.
Buddy, let's talk about this.
I mean, you saw half show, so maybe half ticket.
Exactly.
Yeah. Elaine will be here next week. She loves black
poor
people.
Poor guy. He just trying to make it.
Yeah.
So we, you know, so there's, so I go, I say to Gaffin, I go, well, I'm bringing you up. And he goes, oh, no, you're not.
Smart move.
The whitest comic ever.
Yeah.
Hot Pockets cannot follow.
No.
Hot Pockets can wait.
Yes.
Yeah. So we're, I'm like, okay. So I go up there, and I guess the first thing I said was, sorry about that, folks.
which is like, I mean,
it's so
such a simple yet accurate way to describe what just like.
Well, because you can't go up there and say, so have you seen this in the news, guys?
Yeah, like, you can't go back to
address it, but you don't want to blow it up.
You can't blow it up either. So it was a weird one. And then I did say, I go, I think we just saw Kramer morph into Mel Gibson, because it was right after
Mel Gibson
thing.
Wow. Having a line.
Wow.
I had a line.
Having a line.
Yeah, I had a line, and it got a laugh. And then, but then I had to do 10 minutes, and that was brutal.
Oh,
you know, and I'll tell you who saved the day, who didn't, I don't think, get any credit for this, but Mike Marino. Because I brought Mike up next. He was the guy after
Jim.
Oh, so Jim was like, no.
Jim's not going up.
Oh, wow.
So I brought up Marino, and Marino gets up there and he goes, hey, what's the big deal? He goes, I'm from Jersey. This happens every day. He goes, this is nothing. And the way he said it, it just calmed everybody down.
Yeah.
But there weren't many people left.
I was going to say,
at that point.
And also, the chaos is just filing into the lobby and outside.
And they're outside.
It's almost like that transition to the Midnight
whole crowd's
Show, right?
Outside. You kind of.
Yeah.
Only
yeah.
everyone's pissed. Oh, well, that can happen then, too.
Yeah.
But everyone's out front just screaming, and it was crazy, chaotic.
Wow.
He somehow escaped up to Jamie's offices upstairs in the third
I was going to say, you can't just walk outside at that
no.
point.
No.
Those guys were probably looking for him, right?
They were. I'm sure they were. And I think he wanted to go down and apologize out front, and everybody goes, no, dude.
Yeah, don't, yeah. no. Yeah, yeah, you can't. No. Man, and this is the time, and people don't remember, like this is before cell phone cameras. This is before everyone has.
Well, everybody kind of thought it was just going to be a bad night. Because people were just starting to use cell phone cameras, and I didn't even, you know, I'm at the Comedy Store the next night, and we were talking about it. We said, did you hear he had a meltdown kind of, you know.
Everybody's, but people were like, kind of putting the pieces together.
Yeah, and everybody was like, oh, yeah, well, that'll probably blow over, but that's too bad he did that. And then somebody goes, I bet somebody had a camera running, a phone. And back then, it was just, you know, there were still flip phones.
Yeah. People so real grainy video.
Yeah. And people were just starting to take video.
Right.
And so, sure enough, somebody did have one running, and that's what
and
happened.
Got all the juicy parts of that exchange.
And the only thing they got of me was me at the very end going, sorry about that, folks. So everybody, everyone.
Did you get a lot of texts and emails from that?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, everyone. And
that's a credit, right?
It is, yeah.
Is that on IMDb? Well,
certainly. The
guy from the Michael Richards video, not Michael Richards.
Yeah.
Not the kind of social media
exposure.
Exposure I was looking for. But I did have one. This was a bad incident. I had pitched a show to a big production company.
Mm-hmm.
They had a show on the air, network show. And I thought I had pitched done a really good pitch. And they weren't getting back to me. They weren't returning my calls. So right the next day after this happened, I get this call, and it's their assistant, and she goes, they really want to talk to you. They really need to talk to you. And I thought, oh, man, they like my idea.
Oh, man.
You know, great. So they get on the phone, and everyone had been calling me, asking me, sure. what happened? What happened? Sure. You know, so I get on the phone. They go, hey, what happened with Kramer? And I go, you know what? Fuck you.
Well, by the way, for those, like,
never did sell that show.
You don't swear, really.
Yeah.
No,
so to have that go on, that makes me laugh.
Because, you know, they wouldn't return my call for what I was hoping for. And yet they had no problem calling me to ask me something.
Different priorities.
Oh, yeah. Fuck that.
Yeah.
How fast did you have a sweating like Michael Richards at a.
I did have one. pretty quick.
I mean, now you could.
Sweating like Michael Richards anywhere.
Yeah. You could be
still.
Yeah, you could be your own sweating like joke where you're like sweating like Fraser Smith having to follow Michael Richards.
Yeah.
Fraser, if you had a plush doll with a pull string in the back.
Which I do. Come on.
But that has nothing to do with his comedy.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. It's a whole different thing. Yeah.
That could have three Fraser catchphrases. I want two comedy and one life. What would they be?
These are the jokes, folks.
Yep.
That's it.
That would be one.
And,
So two comedy, one life, right? Yeah. What about a joke that might be, or I guess a line, or a...
Essential Fraser Smith one-liner.
Well, I don't know. There's essential. Okay, I guess should I do one that I'm doing now?
Yeah.
Okay,
sure.
You get one joke in the plush toy.
Trump keeps saying that he doesn't want the NFL players to take a knee. I go, that's funny. He didn't have a problem with Stormy Daniels. She took two. Come on, folks. Knock it off.
Legend.
Oh, my God. All right. Now one for life. Like a life. Fraser Smith anecdotal. I've seen it all. Here's some just straight up life encouragement.
Encouragement. I don't know.
Or just advice. Or just or something you say or a quote you like or...
Well, I always like when Rodney would say, hey, all right, cut it out, okay, knock it off.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I like it just doesn't mean anything. But it's just that kind of, hey, it's not real serious up here.
Yeah.
Life is not that, I guess that would be the only real redeeming feature of my character would be that his attitude is, life's not that serious. Don't be so uptight about everything and just silly is good. Mm-hmm. And light is good.
Well, I want to piggyback on that because how do you feel when, because I think your comedy is so universal and likable that any person can enjoy it. And, you know, when you see people, you've done shows, been a part of them, or seen it from offstage of people just getting perturbed at a show and getting offended or whatever. How do you understand that? Or are you just like, why?
Well, I get it. Especially nowadays, people are uptight. And I think it's an uptight world. Look what's going on. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think the only thing I really bring to the table is a lighter take at life.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know. I guess I've always had that, and that's why I always got in trouble in school because I would I would never be taking anything seriously, and I was always in the back of the room making jokes about the teacher, and they always hated me. And you know,
this is the lunch, folks. Yeah. This is the lunch.
This is the Spanish.
Yeah. Do you remember things you would utter to classmates?
5 years of Spanish one is not a joke.
Couldn't get past it, huh?
Yeah, and I just did a thing for my high school reunion. I sent a thing, and I did just a bunch of getting old jokes.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, I don't say I'm getting old. I sent him a video because I couldn't be there. I go, but I've got medic alert on speed dial. I go. At this point, my blood type is Geritol. I go, if my prostate gets any bigger, I'm going to have to count it as a dependent. I go, when I flip people off, thanks to my arthritis, it hurts me more than it does them. These are the jokes. Knock it off.
The legend.
Do you have books and books of jokes, or are you just remembering them all?
You know, I wish I had kept more of my older jokes. Mm-hmm. I let a lot of them go because, you know, the one thing I have is a quick turnover.
Because it's current events. It's news.
Yeah. So I later figured out you could and you guys know this, you can take an old joke and tweak it to today just
absolutely.
By changing a couple words.
Sure.
And like an idiot, I let a lot of those older jokes go that were pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, you could take any racial topic. It's usually universal. You just plug in some other name that you can take a Michael Richards joke
and Roseanne.
Wow. Yeah. And essentially just switch them or update them and then you're good to go.
Thank you, Roseanne.
Did you work with her?
I know Roseanne. Yeah. Yeah, I know Roseanne.
Have you talked to her throughout all this?
I haven't. I don't know her that well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I was always a fan of hers in terms of her stand-up. I loved her stand-up.
Of course.
But I didn't like what happened here.
You moved here in when?
78.
And how, and start comedy here that same
time? Well, I got on the radio pretty quickly. I got on K-Rock.
Yeah.
And this is not Kevin and Bean K-Rock. This is before them.
This is before they actually had studios. No. They, it was actually in a hotel suite.
Wow.
Yeah. And I get this job, and I'm coming from Detroit, and I'd been in a big station there, and I'm like, what is this?
Yeah.
And
you were on air.
Yeah. I'm on the air. And that got me noticed in town because K-Rock was the hot station then because they were the underdog. Mm-hmm. And they were bringing in the new music, all the new wave and all the hip hop. I mean, the new wave and the punk.
Yeah.
They were bringing in.
And this in the 70s.
Yeah. Late 70s.
Late 70s. Right.
And so I got this gig there. And all of a sudden, I blew up. I was like viral before there was viral.
Wow. And, what do you think contributed to that? What were you doing?
I was just a wild kid.
Yeah.
You know, on cocaine and crazy.
For real?
Yeah, I was a wild cat.
While you were on air?
Yeah, I was out of my mind.
Wow. You know?
But crazy I was young enough
cocaine,
to do
what's
it.
What's that like?
It was just all my same jokes.
These are jokes, folks. These are the jokes.
Really fast.
These are jokes. Yeah. Holy crap. Yeah. Who's got jokes? You got jokes? Oh, man, I'd suck a dick for some jokes.
I was just out of my mind.
Is that one of the plush toy catchphrases? I'd suck a dick for some jokes?
Yeah, sure. I probably would. I need jokes. I need jokes. But, you know, it was like a really good chance for me to blow up because, mm-hmm. you know, everyone went to that little station. It was a great story. They went from, I call it worst to first. I've actually written a script about it where they were a last place station that leapfrogged all the big corporate stations.
Wow.
And we're in last place. And there's a lot of stations in this market, over 100.
Yeah.
They went to number one.
Wow. Where were they before that?
102.
Yeah, that's incredible.
But it was like, and Rodney Bingenheimer had a lot to do with it.
Oh, right.
You know Rodney.
Rodney Bingenheimer.
What? Yeah.
Well, Number one voice in radio. This is literally what he talks like.
Rodney is...
Godhead.
Crazy little guy.
The Pillsbury
guy.
Doughboy?
No, he's just a little guy. He looks like...
he's the king of the... They made a documentary about Rodney Bingenheimer.
Mayor of the Sunset Strip.
Yeah, Mayor of the Sunset Strip, and that's who he is. And he's a guy back in the day when bands could give their CD, their record, to a DJ. The DJ could listen to it and be like, I like this, and then play it. Whereas that can't happen now.
No,
now you have so many bosses and the lineup are predetermined, but he broke so many bands.
Huge bands.
I mean,
you know, from Zeppelin and Queen and Bowie and everybody,
and to more modern bands like No Doubt. No Doubt was a local ska punk band in Orange County.
Right.
They got their tape to Rodney Bingenheimer. He put it on K-Rock, and
boom!
Now Gwen Stefani's banging a country star.
Yeah.
So I mean, yeah.
Thanks a lot, Rodney.
We
just took all of our cues from him because he knew what he was doing and with the music, and so started playing all that music. And then I was lucky enough to break a couple big bands. And
who'd you break?
Well,
Hanson.
Yeah, I thought
you played Mbop.
Those three idiots.
Those chicks are hot.
They moved me.
You can find them every Thursday at the Ice House.
The lesbian bar. Yeah. They moved from the. From the hotel room,
mm-hmm.
where they were actually in a hotel suite across the street because they were building new studios. So they went allegedly. They went into this little two-story building, and David Lee Roth used to climb up the fire escape.
Wow.
I didn't know who it was at that time, and climb in through the window. We had no security. Kick in the door, and he'd go, "Hey man, you got to play my test pressing, bro." And I'd be like, "What? Get out of here!" You know, I'd toss him out. You know, and then he'd come back next week, and he kept. So finally, I played it, and it was "Ain't Talking About Love," and the phones lit up, and then we started playing that song, and then it, you know, took off.
Wow.
I don't know if I discovered him, but I mean, I helped.
Hey, you helped break Van Halen.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess. You know.
So there you go.
And you know, K-Rock in those days could do that because everybody was listening to him.
Yeah.
Everybody.
You could break a band.
And then I got really big off of that in a very short amount of time.
Mm-hmm. And that's when radio was, radio, a local radio show was the equivalent of Carson for that market, where you would just, if you were on the radio and some guy played you or some guy mentioned you, be killing it.
I remember going to a party and Carson was there and he goes, "I hear Fraser Smith is here." I was like an underground.
Wait, are you serious?
Yeah, I was like an underground. Only you said it like this. I hear Fraser Smith is here. That's weird.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, my name got really big. It was like Stern type of thing, you know.
No
but
shit.
Not maybe as big as Stern, but it got pretty big.
I've
and it was just stories. Because yeah. of that station. Really, it wasn't me.
Now
was
I've heard old K-Rock stories about how. Managers and record labels would slip the DJs extra cash, drugs, things like that to get their bands on the air. Sure. Is that all happened
back then?
Can you confirm or deny? You can confirm.
I can confirm unofficially. And, those were the days when that still, I guess, was going on. Yeah. And it was a wild and woolly time.
Now, have you? Because I know Adam Carolla is making the K-Rock documentary.
Is he really?
Yeah. Have you reached out to him at all?
You know, they one of their guys contacted me, and then okay. I haven't heard back from them, so I haven't really done anything.
Oh, we got to help bridge that gap.
But yeah. I'm a big fan of Adam's. I think he's awesome, sure. And I love that whole era of K-Rock that followed.
Well, sure. It's Adam Carolla. It's Jimmy Kimmel.
Those guys were awesome.
Yeah. All on the radio.
And they're still awesome, but back when they were on K-Rock, they were great.
And they're just local talent that everyone sort of passed up, and then K-Rock found these guys.
Yeah.
Were you on in the morning, or?
No, I was on at night. I had a Friday and Saturday night show.
Awesome.
And at the peak of the thing, I got fired because I didn't realize, I was really young, and I didn't realize... off the record is not really off the record because they did a big article on me in LA Magazine, I think it was. And the reporter shows up and he's like, because they were at that time, they were trying to sell the station, which they wound up doing. Mm-hmm. And so they were playing no commercial. It was commercial free. That meant our checks were bouncing and all this stuff. Yeah. So, but I didn't want to quit because it was too big.
Yeah.
So I just kept going in, you know, anyway. And the reporter at the end, he goes, "Hey, do you want to go have a drink?" And so we go over to the lesbian bar, and we're hanging out, we're having a drink, and he goes, "Hey, off the record," and he had his tape recorder shut off, and it was in his backpack.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh well, you know, he's
in his backpack.
Yeah,
it's can't penetrate sound.
Yeah,
this is Jansport.
Yeah, we're just talking.
Yeah.
So we're having a drink, and he goes, "Well, tell me off the record, what's going on over there? I mean, they're not playing any commercials. How are you guys getting paid? What's going on? So I start going. Well, you know, we're not going to
open up in your heart. Yeah.
Yeah. And I said all this stuff that you know, I was an idiot.
Yeah.
And so when this big article comes, it was a huge article on me. I thought this is going to be my big break.
Yeah.
I get fired the next day.
Holy shit. Because the article.
Yeah.
Now
because,
mainly...
And I don't blame my bosses. You know what? They were trying to sell that place. Mm-hmm. They didn't need some dummy kid going on there and spilling the beans.
Fuck.
You know, and so it was really on me.
But then you got picked up by KLOS.
It worked out pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was off for about a month and didn't know what I was going to do.
What did you do in that month?
Just hung around with my buddies and got loaded.
Yeah.
and was depressed.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's really a weird thing to be kind of like probably what Roseanne's feeling right now.
Sure.
You know, you're on top one day and the next day you're down.
Yeah.
And you're way down because all of a sudden no one can reach you and people bail quick.
Yeah.
You know, I noticed.
Especially in this town.
Well, yeah, probably.
Yeah.
But I noticed that I'd never been a big, you know, hotshot with women or anything. But all of a sudden when I was the big radio guy, I was getting all these women.
That's
it was unbelievable.
Awesome.
It was like a rock star. I was how did this happen?
Yeah.
I couldn't believe how it was happening.
Did you have a go-to line or a place you would
Nothing.
Take them to?
Nothing. I just had the show.
Wow.
The show,
this is the penis, folks.
That didn't work. But, yeah. but as soon as my show went off the air, they were all gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was just. It happens quick.
That's this city, though, right?
Yeah.
I guess it's
fame in general, right?
Just
yeah.
General,
I mean,
yeah.
I mean, they talk about it that happening to sports players all the time, where it's like they're the king, and then they get injured, they have to retire, or just they get cut from the team. And
I don't mean that
gone.
As a knock on women at all. I just mean I think it's just what I was trying to say. Really, is what you said. It's fame. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, when someone's fame goes, everybody bails.
Yeah.
It's not just everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody's like, well, there goes my manager. There goes my agent.
I know.
And they all bailed on me too.
Now, when does stand up come in? Because while you're doing all this radio stuff, is
are you going to clubs?
Well, yeah. I had met Jamie Masada and a friend of mine who was a comedian and a producer. He's a radio.
You got about 15, 20 more minutes?
Yeah, about 20.
Great. Okay, great.
Was producing my show. this guy, Vic Dunlop. I don't know if you remember Vic.
I remember Vic Dunlop.
Great guy. Yeah. Really, really funny comedian.
Oh, wow.
Was on Make Me Laugh.
Yeah.
Show Make Me Laugh. Yeah. And he was...
make really weird eyes. Like, his eyes would kind of bulge out when he would do a punchline.
Yeah, the crazy eyes.
Yeah.
A really funny dude. And he was a producer as well. And had been doing some TV stuff. And he was kind of the go-to guy around town for comedy at that time. So he had this little office up in Hollywood Boulevard. He goes, Fraser, I want to produce your show. So I thought, okay, cool, you know. So I go up. This is when I got the KLOS job.
Mm-hmm.
And the first day up there, he goes, we're in his office, and he goes, I got a guy I want you to meet. I think he's going to be your sidekick. And I hadn't even thought about a sidekick. I was like, what? I work alone, you know. So then he brings in this guy. In walks this guy with this white suit and a white hat. I go, who is this idiot? It was Jamie. You know, I just thought he looked crazy. And so we start talking, and I couldn't understand anything he was saying because this was the 70s.
That Israeli accent was so thick back then.
Yeah, yeah, really thick. And he'd been doing stand-up, I guess, at the Comedy Store. So, but we hit it off. At first, I didn't. At first, I was like, who is
Jamie was doing stand-up.
Yeah.
Masada.
And I go, who? This guy's annoying. You know, that was my first thought. I go, Vic is wrong. Usually, Vic is right, but he's wrong.
Yeah.
And then, slowly but surely, Jamie and I started to hit it off. I realized, oh, this guy's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Man. And then...
something about him, right?
Yeah. He was a cool guy.
Once you get to know him, you're like, all right, there's a swagger
to
you.
And he is funny.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's not funny like a stand-up. He's just funny in life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And not just because of the accent. Because I didn't want to be that traditional guy that, you know, remember, this is the time where Iran had the hostages or
right, just before that.
And I thought, oh, is this a good idea to put a Persian guy on, you know?
Yeah.
So we, but he was, the audience took to him immediately. And I think they thought he was maybe an actor putting the voice on. And
we all have thought that at various stages of our lives, going to the Laugh Factory. Yeah, right? Like, this guy can't be serious.
Yes, he is. He is committing to the bit.
Yeah.
This can't really be So anyway, the crowd loved him. And he was called Buddy Buddy. And because that's what he would say to everybody.
Yeah, that was his get-her-done.
Hey, buddy, how you doing, buddy? You know, and so he gets on the show, and he goes off. And every other sentence is, Laugh Factory. And my boss used to say to me, what, why, you know, other people are paying a lot of money for those ads. You can't have him saying Laugh Factory every 10 seconds. But he would get on there, and you'd be in the middle of a bit, and all of a sudden he'd drop, Laugh Factory. And you go, Jamie...
Grassroots marketing.
Yeah, it really was. And he had this tiny little club. It was about...
He would come in while you were banging girls and be like, Laugh Factory!
You could not get rid of him. Yeah. But he tells me one day, he goes, buddy, I am going to buy club. And I go, what? And he goes, yeah, I found a club, buddy. So I knew he didn't have a dime, but he had borrowed some money from a big producer who was trying to get a tax write-off. So he bought that little corner, which is about a third. He had about a third of what he's got now. You know, it's a thin, it was like a Turkish prison. It was just like real thin. And,
I've seen old photos of Richard Pryor on stage, what looks like a hallway.
Yeah, it's like a hallway.
It's just a hallway.
And it probably held max 70.
Yeah.
And you had to cram them in. And, you know, none of the big comics would go there at first. Nobody. So all the comics were going to Comedy Store, and they'd round the corner there at Laurel and Sunset and wave at us like suckers.
Wow.
You know,
was there an audience or any? I mean,
you know, at first none, but then my radio show was pretty big, so I could get a lot of people in.
Awesome.
So I would fill
it up.
For
stage time, yeah? Or no?
Yeah, for stage time.
Okay,
cool. I had never done stand-up. I wanted to try it. And gave me a chance to try stand-up. And so the deal was, you mention, give us some mentions, and then you can get up on stage.
Wow.
So I was going up, and then every once in a while, a big star would come in to try out their stuff, like Pryor, or Eddie Murphy was in there one night, and he would come in with Paul Mooney. And Mooney was by far the best comic that would come there. And they would and Dice, and they would come in just to try new stuff.
Right.
You know?
And it makes a lot of sense, where... someone would want maybe a smaller room, not the hopping place at the Comedy Store.
Like an open mic of today.
Yeah, where you would just go be like, let me just see if this is good before I take it to a main stage.
Yeah. And I was just terrible. And I had, some people would say I've never passed that point. But I had all these dumb, really bad one-liners. You know, I was still doing one-liners, but they were bad. And then
what would the comics say to you?
They didn't care because they were as bad as me, except for... Well, when Pryor and those guys would come in, they wouldn't stay long.
Oh, okay.
They would walk right out. But I do remember one time Tyson was there with Eddie Murphy and Mooney.
And this just is after, like, peak Tyson.
Peak Tyson. He just won the championship for the first time. He was 22, geez. Right? So he's out front. No one recognized him. But I'm a boxing fan, so I recognize him, and I go, "Hey, it's the champ!" And he was just excited to have someone recognize him. He's like, "Yeah, hello, hey, Frase, you okay? I saw your jokes up there, you know." So we're talking.
These are the jokes, folks.
Knock it off! So all of a sudden, everyone does recognize him.
Sure, that voice.
And they start surrounding him. Yeah. So then he can't get away. Then he's mad at me.
Yeah.
Why'd you stop me? And then I still remember Eddie Murphy standing on the corner with his hands on his hips going, "Come on, man." He was trying to get Tyson out of there so they could leave. And here was Tyson causing this big commotion.
God.
What's it like to have a 22-year-old Mike Tyson mad at you?
It wasn't pleasant.
Wait, so Eddie Murphy would go up?
Once in a while.
What was that like?
But he was mostly there, I think, to see Pryor and to hang with Mooney. Everyone idolized Mooney.
Yeah,
and Mooney, Paul Mooney, if you don't know, is a legendary comedian who wrote a lot of Pryor stuff. Wrote a lot of stuff for Eddie too,
And then Chappelle's Show.
Yep.
So like,
just a genius.
Just a genius.
Genius writer and genius performer, and he would hold court. And he was by far the best comic there. You know, the rest of us were a bunch of knuckleheads, but.
Robin was coming through the factory, yeah?
Robin would come down once in a while, too. And Robin was always pleasant and wonderful. I mean, just a great guy. Mm-hmm. You know, super cool. And you'd, all of a sudden, there's this genius on stage at the Little Laugh Factory. And then what happened
there... I mean, that's a big presence in a small space, right?
Well, yeah, those guys. I mean, you know, and then what finally happened was that Jamie had saved up some money. He was saving his dough. Mm-hmm. And the guy had the restaurant next door was called Ah Fong's. And Ah Fong's was a famous Chinese restaurant that the stars all went to. And the inside of the restaurant wasn't that great, but the food was awesome. So and it was back in the limo era. So limos would pull up nonstop all day.
Wow.
And we pretend like they were coming to see us at the last
Sure.
And the driver would run in and get the food for the star and come back out and they'd take off. So finally, Mr. Ah Fong had passed away and they were going to sell the place. So Jamie raised enough money to buy it. And he bought the next thing, and all the comics one night came in, and we knocked the wall down with sledgehammers.
What?
The thing. So then he's got this little club, and it was like, but it looked bad. It was just chairs he had somehow managed to get a hold of, and it just really didn't look like a very good club. But I got a call. My buddy was the head of Fox at that time. And Fox was just starting up, and they wanted to do a stand-up show. And they've been doing it at Igby's, which was a club down in West L.A., owned by Jan Smith, who's now the booker at the Ice House.
Oh, yeah.
And Jan had that club, but it was too far off Broadway for them. They wanted to be on Sunset because they were based on Sunset. So
and Jamie had that prime real estate. That,
and my buddy calls me. He goes, "I'm just about to make your friend a millionaire." And I go, "What?" And he goes, "Yeah, we're taking that club." So they came in and they renovated it at no small expense, you know, and fixed it all up. And then they started doing that show Comic Strip Live out of there, which they did for like 8 years. And he got a huge weekly fee for that. So he saved a location fee and he saved up all that money. Jamie just did really well at some point, and that put him on the map.
Wow.
Amazing. Yeah.
Until Michael Richard showed up.
And really
put him on the map.
Who would come through star-wise, do you remember, like, that was... Because we hear these stories about, like, Dublin's and the Jay Davis shows and...
You just remember back in those days, people didn't really know who Bill Burr was, but Bill Burr was coming in there, you know?
Yeah. But I mean, like, celebrities that would come to the shows, I'm saying.
Oh, well, they would come to the shows.
Yeah, like Cher, I don't know.
You'd see Mick Jagger was there one time. I remember Uma Thurman was there one time. Rihanna came in.
Wow.
They've had a lot of stars.
Because, you know, now it's like, you know, Bieber and Drake's dad, you know, it's like, you know.
not even Drake. But his dad shows up.
Oh, yeah. I remember roasting Drake's dad once. I didn't even know it was Drake's dad. I was like, this guy looks like the Persian Super Mario, and he was just fucked up. And we had this, like, really funny back and forth. And afterwards, he was like, "I'm Drake's dad." I was like, "No, you're not." He goes, "Fucking, yeah, I am." And starts showing me pictures. Like, all right, yeah, all right. Unless
what are you, Pusha T?
I just want to acknowledge that Frazier Smith knows about the beef going on between Drake and Pusha T.
Yeah. Oh, so yeah. I'm trying to hook up Dennis Rodman to solve that. But, you know, it, yeah.
How,
How much do you follow just the topical events of today? I mean, are you reading the news daily now, or is it getting
tougher and tougher to pay attention? It's pretty ugly nowadays, and there's some things you really can't make a joke about.
Actually, I was going to ask you about that, because there obviously are comics out there that are that have this mindset of nothing's off limits. But shit, I haven't heard somebody yet tackle the kids getting separated from their families. Well, and I don't know how you do that.
There's not a lot of humor in that. And you know, the other thing is that I found, and it's kind of a chicken shit way of doing it, really, in a way. But it's Carson used to do it too. He used to say, if you hear me do a Republican joke, I'm going to do a Democratic joke next. He goes, because I can't afford to lose 50% of my audience.
Yeah, right.
So what I try to do is keep it silly. And again, that's really what I think I bring to the table. It's just light and silly. So I'll do a Trump joke, but it won't be a hard Trump joke. It'll be a wacky
Right.
Trump
well, it, joke. Yeah, it's like the Trump joke you said earlier about the Stormy Daniels.
Yeah.
You're not taking a policy side.
Yeah.
You're just saying the facts of what happened.
And I think, you have to, because it depends where you're playing.
Yeah.
Like, we play in town here. We play in these liberal enclaves. And then you go to Vegas, and you've got people from red states in there.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're doing hard jokes against Trump, then they boo.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to just keep it silly.
Yeah.
Make fun of his hair.
Sure.
Stuff that,
toes the line, but doesn't make a strong stance. Yeah. I guess. I mean, do you feel like this is...
I think for other people, maybe, guys, they can take a little stronger stance. My character doesn't really... work that best that way.
Right. Yeah, and it's good that you recognize that and go, okay, this is who I am. Some comics try, like, and this is sort of the advice I try to give young comics when they ask me, like, what should I talk about? I go, well, do you like politics? And they go, like, no. I go, well, then don't talk about politics.
Well, yeah, yeah.
Don't do that. Like, if you're not that guy.
I think that's true, man. If you're not Lewis Black, don't try to be.
Yeah.
And I think that's real good advice.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it's more just my guy is just kind of a silly, nutty, Vegas-y guy.
And that's why I'm always comforted when I see that you're, like, hosting the show, because I go, great. Frazier's going to go up there. He's going to do Frazier. You're going to do the one-liners, get everybody happy, everybody laughing, and now we're ready for the rest of the show. Because the host, it's weird. I've heard of the comics talk about this, but traditionally the host of the show is like, okay, well, that's the weakest guy on the show. It shouldn't be. It's the hardest job.
Well, in some areas it's not. In England, the host is the star of the show.
Right.
And I think in Boston, too, certain cities, they view the host as the star.
Yeah.
I just like it because I like Carson. That was my whole thing.
Yeah.
I just wanted to be Carson. And my whole thing was, well, Carson's a host. I'm going to be that guy.
You should have a talk show.
Well,
and
thanks, guys.
And you filmed that pilot, right, for The Laugh Factory? That was a... When you had like Robert Downey Jr. on,
that was my. I was hoping to get something off of that, and I came close. I have not been able to land that, and that has been probably the most difficult part of my career. Is I haven't been able to establish my dream, which was to get that late night TV show. And I'm still out there pitching.
Yeah,
I'm at an age where I don't know. If they're gonna. Do something with a guy in my age bracket, but you know what? I have to keep going. I can't give up.
To.
You can't give up on your dream.
No.
I was going to ask, what's a typical Frasier day like in L.A.?
Well, I'm usually
usually he has to pay the hooker first.
That's first, and then because they won't leave otherwise. But I, usually for me, it's checking the news sources. I check all the news sources.
What time are you getting up?
I'm up, usually about 9 because I'm up late, and then I'm looking at stuff. I watch all the late night shows. I try to watch all those.
Mm-hmm.
And then I try to write some stuff in the morning if I can. And then it's just used like all of us. I just run errands. And then usually now I have to take a nap if I've got shows that night.
Yeah, just so you can recharge and kind of be ready. And you also record your own podcast. I want to have everyone go check out Frasier's podcast. It's called Puck Off. It is a hockey podcast you do with Joe Bartnick. I've been on the podcast.
Been on there, man.
Yeah. It's fun.
He's great.
Well, when I get a team in Seattle, which we are.
You're getting one, man. I'm happy for you.
And that actually will be a great episode because you can get me maybe opening day and just get like the...
Seattle opinion.
Well, in that perspective of somebody who just got a hockey team.
You would be great on there, and I'm so glad they're doing that franchise. Seattle's a great town, as you know, for sports.
Yeah, it should have every sport, you know what I'm saying?
It should. And hockey. And they're going to support that team. That's going to be a great market. Brad's a Ducks fan.
Yes, sir.
And, you know, it's great having him on there. I've been really fortunate with this thing. I love Joe Bartnik. He's my partner on there.
Yeah, he's hilarious.
But I did not really want to do this initially because I hadn't been following hockey. I was a big hockey guy. The only sport I was any good at it was hockey.
Wow.
When I was
you still
kid.
Play?
No.
Yeah.
But I there's many reasons for that. But I sure. But I
the hooker won't let you.
She's got sharper elbows than I do. But the, that costs extra. But you know, the thing is that you know, I still love the game, but I hadn't been following it. So I said to Joe, "Nah, I don't want to do this." And he goes, "Come on, man, you know how to run a show." He figured I knew how to run a show, and so we started doing it. And it took off in the hockey cities. You know, as you know, Brad, there's a lot of cities like Boston and Philly and New York
Chicago, where
hockey's big. So now I have fans in all those cities, and I'm just so glad I did it. I'm glad Joe talked me into it.
It's awesome. It's really great, and it's a great hockey podcast, but at the same time, it's two great comics. So if you're not a huge fan of hockey, check it out. What a time happened with the Vegas Golden Knights.
See,
and
we really love that. That was
Stanley
a Cinderella
Cup
thing.
And now if you follow Alexander Ovechkin on Instagram, he's doing something new with the cup every day.
Yep. And not all of it legal. But we were glad to see Ovi get that cup. You know, he is their legendary player, and he hadn't won one, so it was nice to see that. And also the Cinderella story of Vegas, as you mentioned, that was a huge thing for
hockey.
Would you ever be a commentator for hockey?
I don't think I could. It really is much harder than it looks. And
the guy that does it for NBC, Doc Emmerich, is just...
They're geniuses.
I don't think it's that tough. And let me give you an example. Ready? All right. The guy's got it. And boy, look at that. He's skating fast. I remember the first time I skated, it was my buddy's birthday party in 1994. Actually, I was trying to pull a Brian Boitano, and I fell on my ass and got a concussion. And I remember waking up to the smelling salts and my buddy leaning over my face being like, "You ruined my birthday." Anyway, it's we're tied at two here in the second period. And,
because you just missed both goals with that damn story.
Oh, damn, I did. Oh, it's 2-2. Oh, now it's 3-2. Oh, hey, where's Emilio Estevez? Quack, quack. Anyway, we'll take a commercial break.
That's my joke.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny that you know, but when you have to memorize or get all those European names, that's the tricky part.
Oh, man.
And say them
instantly.
Yeah.
But, you know, I found out, I'll go back to a quick K-Rock thing.
Yeah.
We did some stuff that on K-Rock back in the day that I thought was revolutionary and also kind of goofy. We covered a Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. And it was me and my engineer, Al Ramirez, and I went and got my buddy who does high school football play-by-play, because play-by-play is pretty tricky.
Sure.
So he did all the play-by-play, and we just made wisecracks. And it got on the front page of the LA Times. It was one of my proudest moments. It said Super Bowl coverage, and you'd get sued for this today, because we just illegally did the feed.
Yeah.
It says Super Bowl coverage, CBS, Frazer Smith, K-Rock.
Whoa. Wow.
Front page of the Times. So we did that. And
you also did, if I remember reading this, the Rose Parade?
We did the Rose Parade for a lot of years, where we would spoof the Rose Parade and make fun of it, and that was really fun to do.
So you would tell people, like, hey, turn on the TV Rose Parade, but then turn down the volume, turn on the radio.
Listen to us, and then we would just rip on it.
Yeah,
you know?
That's awesome.
And then we also did a hockey game. We did a Stanley Cup final game, and we did a boxing match. We did Ali Spinks, and
the one where he won the title,
which was an upset. So, you know, we tried it. It was fun, but nowadays you get in a lot of trouble for that.
Just copyright laws and stuff like that.
No. Have you seen a hockey fight that was maybe just? I mean, do you guys enjoy that as a hockey fan? Or,
well,
to me, that's one of the best parts.
Yeah, our favorite guy is Bob Probert. Because I'm a Red Wings fan, so he was probably the greatest fighter ever, and so I love Probert because he fought everybody.
Yeah,
he wasn't afraid of anybody.
If you had the Stanley Cup for one day, what would you do with it?
I'd take it to the Laugh Factory and try to drown Jamie.
He's not a large man. You might be able to drown him in that.
You could probably swim in that.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
I'd let Brad sleep in it.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Curl up like a bird bath. Yeah. Come on, man.
Like a bird bath.
That'd be great.
I think I crazy glue it to the hood of my car.
What? Now, Frazier, before we wrap up, I want to know, because you've been in LA a minute, and you've probably been to every corner and crevice of this city. Yeah,
crevice certainly.
Not the corners, but the crevices. Yeah.
Do you have a favorite spot to eat, favorite spot to go to if you're taking a family member around or a friend that's visiting that's like, give me an L.A. experience that's not super touristy? And then do you have a place that, like, you're trying to write some jokes or you're trying to just take a Fraser day and go take it easy and relax?
Well, I guess, you know, a restaurant I've always liked is Yamashiro because of the view.
Man. Mm-hmm. And that's like old Hollywood, right?
Yeah,
wasn't that the
old
home
school.
To...
And yeah, I always like that. Musso's and Frank's too, because of the same reason.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I always like to go to the Rainbow Room too, because
Sunset Strip.
Yeah. Because that's legendary.
No affiliation to the Ice House.
They have good pizza. And yeah.
You can't beat it where you're sitting at the same table where all the members of Motley Crue got blowjobs.
You can't beat that.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You really can't beat
under
that.
The table.
I mean, the Rainbow Room looks like a place that story.
No, that's
all true.
That's all true.
Yeah, that was.
And Belushi used to hang out there, right?
Yep, okay. Everyone did.
Wow,
all the stars were there, and you know, and those guys used to give me their cassettes, Motley Crue, and used to give me their cassettes
to play.
Yeah, hey man, you know, before they were
holy shit.
Yeah. And I'd be there. I was the big DJ, so everybody would see me walking through, and I'd leave with a pocket full of cassettes.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
and now if you go to the Rainbow Room, you are guaranteed to meet Ron Jeremy.
I'm sure he'll be there.
He is there every night.
He's the maitre
d'. Every time I've been there.
Also giving
Ron's
out
been
tapes.
There. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, still getting cassettes from him.
Yeah. not ones you want to watch.
No.
Just audio of him fucking. Yeah. And what about just favorite spot to go to on a Fraser day?
Well, you know, usually if I'm writing stuff, I just like to go somewhere quiet.
Yeah.
Because you can't write if it's...
So like one of Brad's shows?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
No. I mean, I'll go to a local Starbucks or something because for writing, I'd rather have as quiet as possible.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Well, I mean, you are, I keep saying the legend while we're doing this.
Even though you look better than both of us.
No, I don't.
I want to emphasize that to the people.
No. Yeah.
Fraser Smith is a legend. You
this
need to come
me,
out
it's
to
a
LA.
Stunt double.
Yeah. Oh, shit. Well, he's, fooled us.
You take off your face, you run, Jerry.
Yeah.
Mention my dick size.
Here's my cassette.
Fraser, well, where can people see you?
Well, my radio show is on Sunday nights on KLO. I got to get you guys on there. You know, your manager, Barry Katz, is on every week.
That's right. Barry comes on.
Fraser, I've got to tell you, I've had the number one podcast.
Number one podcast. Kevin Hart was on my podcast. I thought it was Brad Williams with a tan.
Oh, that's a good one. You're doing great. But yeah, I'm on KLOS, 95.5 KLOS, and I'm there Sunday nights, 11 till 3 p.m. Excuse me, 3 p.m. Yeah. 3 a.m.
Yeah.
11 p.m. to 3 a.m.
Okay.
And every Sunday. And then you can get it on iHeartRadio and they broadcast it too. So check out their website.
And go, like, everyone goes through there. Everyone.
Oh, yeah. Well, I've been lucky to have a lot of good guests. And, you know, I had Tommy Lasorda last week. He was Yeah, he was phenomenal.
Is he still ticking?
He's 92 and forgets everyone's name, but he really has great stories. Garvey.
What's up, Freezer?
You're Garvey, right?
Garvey.
Yeah.
But you know, so I have that, and then I'm, you know, I'm at all the clubs, thankfully.
Yeah, you are. Yeah.
I'm at the Improv tonight on Melrose, and I'm at the Laugh Factory later in Hollywood.
Awesome. Yeah. So if you go to a Los Angeles Comedy Club, you will probably see Fraser Smith.
One of my stunt doubles.
Yeah. You will be impeccably dressed. You will have amazing one-liners, and you will always have a good time if you're in the audience.
Fraser,
the show.
Yeah, this is the truth. You are not only a comics comic, but I mean, everybody loves you. Everybody loves watching you, and that's got to be a pretty cool thing. I know you know that.
Well, I you know,
you're cognizant of the. I mean, because also it's you know, you're so fun to watch, so different, nothing like you, and off stage. I mean, find a sweeter, more genuine person, you know?
Well, you know, thank you for saying that. I like people. I guess I'm lucky or unlucky in that regard. I don't know. I've just always been a people guy. I always love people, and I love all the other comics.
Yeah.
For some reason, we just always connect.
Yeah.
And
it's a unique
I guess
world.
I'm pretty proud of that, but I don't think much about it. In fact, I'm usually annoyed. But I do
hide it well.
Yeah. I do love people, and that's nice of you to say.
Can we end on three sweating-like jokes?
Okay, my latest star.
Yeah, classic or new.
Yeah.
I was sweating like J.R. Smith at a post game interview.
That's a good one.
Yeah. I was sweating like a Kardashian taking the SATs. I was sweating like Donald Trump watching Telemundo.
Good night, everybody.
All right, guys. Cut it out. Come on.
So that's the show.
Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or aboutlastnightpodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessime Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.